This is Japan Baseball Weekly, the only English podcast covering all 12 NPB teams. And now, your hosts, John E. Gibson and Jim Allen.
Hi, and welcome to the Japan Baseball Weekly podcast. It's for the week of July 13th. I'm John Gibson, and with me on a Saturday morning is Jim Allen. How you doing, bud? You awake?
Can I have a nap before I answer that question? Yeah, I know. I'm good. How you doing, man?
I'm okay. Look, you went to bed late. I got up super early, so we're in the same boat. Lack of sleep boat. I'm in the middle. You're probably at the front of it.
Yeah, I had about a 3 hour nap after finishing the blog and getting to bed, and so.
And I was up at 4:30 to go running so that I could get a run in before we record, and then
okay,
I have to
so
go to
you
the
did.
Office.
I did get to sleep before you got up, so that's a good sign.
Good. Excellent. All right. Again, as we have been doing throughout this coronavirus crisis, we thank the frontline and essential workers worldwide. And in Tokyo, where the testing is going up, so the numbers, again, of confirmed cases going up. But still, as the human race, we have the answers to the test. Let's just fill them in and get out of this thing. Let's go. On this week's show, we've got a telephone chat with Stefan Romero of Rock 10. We're going to look at the Eagles, the Pacific League, the Central League, talk about Jay Jackson, and handle some high heat. So let's start swinging.
Clearing the bases!
Okay, well, thanks for that great introduction.
What I always do.
Yeah. Well, yeah, you and our cast of thousand. Anyway, okay. So this past week I had a chat with Stefan Romero of the no matter how many times I say it still sounds weird, of the Rock 10 Eagles, because he's been an Oryx Buffalo guy. You know somebody is a longtime Buffalo when they come out and say, as Stefan does, they're a great organization, you know, because there's a loyalty thing there and they treat you well. I mean, they treat the foreign players, the imported players, very well. And so, you know, that affection comes out, and of course people have affection for their teammates. You'll hear that.
Right.
But there's they went in a different direction, and Stefan went in a different direction. He went east and north, and it seems like that was, I don't want to say it was a win-win situation for everybody, but it sure seems like it. I mean, he's out. Everything seems to be going right. And when you talk about the Eagles, sort of a thing about everything going right. So let's talk about, Stefan Romero. And also, I want to apologize for the sound quality. I think we were both talking on speakerphones, and I was in a lobby, so I was sort of conscious about the sound.
Right.
So in the beginning, it's quite rough. I apologize for that. I'll try to do better next time. But
we're doing what we can to get these interviews. So sometimes it's going to turn out to be that way. I hope the listeners understand.
Yeah. So Stefan's always gracious and a fun person to talk to. So let's have a listen. Okay, our guest this week on the Japan Baseball Weekly podcast is Japan veteran Stefan Romero. Thank you for joining us.
It's always a pleasure having me. Thank you.
Oh, it is our pleasure as well. You've been a good friend of the podcast, and I want to I don't know if it was refreshing to see you in a Rock 10 Eagles uniform. It was a different look, but yeah, you look good in it.
Thank you.
Now, can you tell me a little bit about the process of choosing the Eagles? Did they make a sales pitch?
Not really. I mean, I had a couple of offers to go back to the States. Unfortunately, things didn't work out at Oryx. You know, I give my best to them.
Mm-hmm.
They're a great organization. They treated me well, and you know, they opened up their family to mine, and mm-hmm. you know, everything was positive over there. But you know, then we weren't able to come to an agreement in the off season. So Rakuten reached out to me because I was a free agent. Mm-hmm. So I had a couple, you know, minor league offers with big league invites and everything like that in the States. This is all pre-coronavirus, obviously.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I wanted to continue my career in Japan, close to 3 years I was with Oryx, so it's phenomenal. I love Japan, love the culture, love the baseball. So had the opportunity to come to Rakuten, and at that time it was my pretty much my only Japanese team that offered me a contract. So I took it.
Now let me ask, talking about the coronavirus, did that layoff help you? Because I know it seems like every year there's something that sneaks up on you and gets you fitness wise.
Mm-hmm.
Did the long layoff help or not?
Yeah, I mean, definitely. In the off season, I was a free agent, so I didn't really have, a job per se.
Mm-hmm.
And my second son was born in the end of January.
Oh, congratulations.
So, thank you, appreciate that. So along with your wife being pregnant, I feel like the husband kind of gets pregnant as well, like in terms of like gaining weight, gain the baby weight, the sympathy weight. So, I gained a little extra pounds in the off season, and then not having a job, being a little bit stressed about that, just overeating, being back in the States, being home, not really going out too much and eating and stuff like that, just staying home and, just packing on the pounds, I guess. And, when I came to Japan, I was a little overweight, and then, I always come in the spring a little overweight just because I know the grind of Japanese spring training, all the running, all the extra BP. I know I'm going to lose weight
mm-hmm.
within those 2 months.
Right.
And then, coronavirus came and it extended that per se. So, it's either one way or the other. You feel, get in top shape during that 45-day quarantine or something we were in.
Right.
Here in Sendai, in our apartment, couldn't leave, go to a grocery store once a week type thing. So, I made that priority to my friend nutrition and work out daily. And, I was fortunate for that. I guess I was a silver lining and all that just to get prepared for, the season ahead.
Well, I saw early on you playing right field, and you looked several years younger.
Yeah, back to my first year when I played center field with the Buffaloes.
Wow. Almost I can't picture that, because I just know from talking to you that it's been a kind of a shopping list of little injuries, but you look and watching you play the outfield and watching you run the bases, I have to think you look really fit.
Yes, thank you. Yeah, I mean, I'm probably, I feel like I'm in the best shape in Japan by far over the last couple of years. Obviously, my first year in Japan, just with the adrenaline and possibly working and adapting to the new diet, I was about the same weight
mm-hmm.
that I am now. So, I had a pretty good year that year as well. So I try to picture myself being my ideal playing weight,
mm-hmm.
with successful season. So I look back, and when I was younger, I was at this body weight and I felt this way. So why not try to go back to that
mm-hmm.
type of body type? And unfortunately enough, the coronavirus allowed me to get into that, that headspace to get into that physical regimen that I was able to achieve.
Now, I see that you're switching a little bit with Jabari Blush and right field and DH, mm-hmm. and does that help?
Yeah, definitely. Especially they're both 30 years old now. We're not 21. Can't just wake up out of bed and, run 100% sprint anymore. But it's a real good, little switch off.
Mm-hmm.
It keeps us fresh. It's not really like an off day.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, in Japan, they don't really believe in off days. Like in the States, if you play like 5 straight games, like you'll get a DH day, and then, they'll give you a day off or whatever.
Okay.
But here in Japan, they want their fans to play all 120 games, 143 games. So, that DH spot is a really clutch situation, especially in Japan, in a really good situation.
Now, before you came to the Eagles, what was your impression of this team?
I mean, their lineup is really dangerous. was just last year was his first year. You've seen him a lot in Fable. I played against him for 2 years or yeah, 2 seasons when he was with Sabu. So, he was their guy. Sabu's lineup was incredible my first 2 years, but he was the guy that was, 130 RBIs a year, 25 to 30 home runs a year. So when he came to the Eagles, I saw that lineup and it's like, the Eagles are getting better and better and better every year. When they acquired Jabari last year, that really stepped up their team. And, I played with Jabari for 10 years.
Okay.
So I've known Jabari for 10 years. We came up in the Seattle Mariners organization together. So we were drafted the same year, 2010.
Well, he's a great
Seattle.
Yeah.
So I've known Jabari for the latter parts of 10 years now, so.
Yeah, well, he's a great guy, so that's a good guy to have around.
Definitely.
It says something about you and him and the team that they could afford to let somebody the quality of Zealous Wheeler go. I mean, they must really have a. I don't want to be over optimistic, but I guess he wanted playing time. But you guys got a good thing going right now.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, obviously, the five, I guess this year, the 5-4 and everyone now, they expanded to one more, but, they could only activate 4 during the game. But, we talked about that early on, and, I just had to go out and play my hardest every day, and I just want to go out and play how I play, and, that's enough.
Well, the whole team, I was watching the first two games of the Lotte series, and you guys look really, locked in terms of the quality of the at-bats that you're getting up and down the lineup. It was very impressive. And, you and Jabari and Asamura, and I can't say enough about how much he was good before, but I think he's just getting better as a hitter every year, or getting smarter as a hitter every year. Now, I want to ask, the Eagles have a new manager this year, and he's a first-year manager at the top level, but he was the farm manager last year. And what does he bring, what are his the strengths that you see, or what does he bring to the table?
He brings a lot of unity to the team. He has a really good, sense of being positive, taking every game one day at a time. I know that's an old cliche, but it's a very important cliche in baseball.
Mm-hmm.
It's literally take every day, today's the most important game.
Mm-hmm.
And to view every single game, every day as the most important game. So he really emphasizes, every Tuesday, I'll pop it off there. That's a big game, especially with a 6-game series.
Mm-hmm.
Every Tuesday, that's the most important game. The week, because it sets the tone for the rest of the week. So he's a manager that likes, to play aggressive, lets you run the bases. Take that extra base, first or third on the base here. That style of play is primarily accustomed to, especially in the States. That's how we were taught. To take the extra base to play. So he had really good success in minors as a manager. I think they win.
They did.
The Western was it the Western League?
Eastern League.
Is that England? The Eastern League. They won the Eastern League last year. So that's a tough decision on his job. To be a top team, even though it's in England, but still, at that level, the younger guys to buy in a system to compete and learn.
Yeah, certainly. Well, I'm a big fan of that, of hiring the minor league manager, because they know the talent that's available to them, and they're less afraid of using the guys they've seen play every day.
Exactly.
Okay, interesting. Yeah, I'm glad you mentioned about the base running, because one of the comments from Tuesday's game against the Marines was how well you guys were running the bases, and not fast so much, although there are some fast guys, but just smart.
Yes. Yeah, no, not giving away outs on the base passes is one of the big, you know, things that we worked on in camp and preparing for the season was, you know, just be a smarter base runner, just knowing the situations and don't give outs on the base pass.
Yeah.
Solely for the fact that our lineup is so dangerous, you know, we want guys on the bases at all times. So if we could reduce the amount of mistakes on the bases, it gives our hitters more of a chance, you know, to hit a homer or hit something in the gap and just keep the lineup and keep pushing the lineup to get to the next guy.
I guess the other thing I want to comment is, and it's like you're not the only healthy guy there. It seems like the whole lineup's healthy.
Oh, man, the lineup is incredible playing. I feel like I give my success early on to every guy around me, you know, because because hitting is contagious. You know, that's another cliche that you hear in the States, that hitting is contagious. When you see, like when I see Blash, Asamuda, like these guys just hitting, you know, it gives you that sense of confidence that, you know, these guys are smashing the ball. So I could smash the ball as well. And you get up there already with a sense of confidence. And, you know, it calms you down and it makes you want to play to your potential. So that's really good to see.
Well, speaking of playing to your potential and running the bases smart, I thought the approach at the plate, when the Marines came into this series, they were doing that to the Buffaloes on Sunday. They just dissected Yoshinobu Yamamoto, and it was just a classic performance. And then I thought, oh, this is going to be interesting in Rockton, and then you guys did it to them.
Yeah. Like I said, you just take it one at a time, and you know, one walk can lead to a base hit, that base hit can lead to a homer, and I feel like that's been a scenario these last couple games that, you know, guys get on early and Asamoah just hits like a 3-run homer or something. This guy's just amazing to watch. He has 20 RBIs the first 11 games, and you know, 5 homers. It's just something else to watch. It's fun. It sure is. Definitely fun to watch.
I mean, I watch the games, and I think when they get him out, I'm thinking, boy, that was luck. Or, you know, he hit a double on Tuesday, and I thought that ball was gone off the bat and it died.
Yep.
I mean, he was hitting rockets. Every game I've seen, he's hitting rockets that are caught.
Oh, yeah.
So just a lot of fun. Sounds like it's going to be a fun year in Sendai. And
yes,
we wish you well, and thank you for joining us in your busy schedule. And look forward to having you on again this year.
And no problem. Thanks for having me. Thank you.
And seeing you at the ballpark.
Yeah, definitely. I'll see you soon.
Okay, take care, bud.
All right, thank you again.
Thank you much.
All right, well, thank you, Stefan. Hopefully I'll get to see you at the ballpark. It's always a pleasure.
Same here. I hope to see you soon, bud.
So, John, what do you take away from Mr. Romero's observations?
Well, a lot. And before, I failed to mention in the opening that the reason we're taping on Saturday this morning is because I'm taking the family on a weekend getaway, so to speak. We're going to try to do one of those contactless trips where you don't have any contact with other people.
Oh, okay.
I thought it meant like
shutting off an app in your iPhone or something.
Oh, wow. I don't think I'm capable. That's like shutting off an artery.
Okay.
But so that's why we're taping on Saturday. So apologies that we won't have the whole weekend series in, but especially in the Pacific League, the second week of 6-game series. But in terms of Stefan, I understand that chat probably was difficult to hear at times. In fact, Jim sent me the copy earlier in the week, and I had to chop a couple sections out because the parts were just inaudible. So again, we apologize for that, but thank you for listening to it. You know, nothing critical, of course, I don't want to call out Stefan, and I don't ever call out these players when they give us this information, but you know, and I know, I've talked to numerous players in the past when the tape recorder is on, they give us the company line sort of spiel about a mutual parting with a previous team. And then when we turn it off and off the record, they're talking and we get a different story. So this is kind of hard to read. I actually think this really is a mutual thing. I don't think Oryx was probably totally satisfied with the numbers that Stefan had, and Stefan probably wasn't satisfied with everything, but he with everything on the field that he did, but he probably figured, hey, you know, the team knows that I was playing hurt. I had this and that and the other to deal with, and still probably they couldn't come to a mutual agreement. Usually when I hear that, I always think, well, the player didn't get the money he wanted, or the team is just tired of the act that they get for a mm-hmm. from a player or whatever. And so we get mutual parting, and it's hard to read. But I think in this case, it's probably very true.
It was, although I always have to question whether Oryx understands that much to be able to to measure when a player is giving them their all or not, because they seem to misread things, like, even more than I do, or at least as much as I do. So,
which is bad because you're not inside the building.
Well, I mean, just in general, yeah, they seem to miss things. So, yeah, but and also, of course, they had at least at the winter meetings they signed Adam Jones, and so I think that was there was an idea that they were going in a new direction, and they basically kept Brandon Dixon, and that was it.
Yeah, and Stefan said everything was positive. Now, that's the kind of rhetoric I think I might raise a flag, not a red one, but a yellow one. I don't think everything was positive, but I think for the most part, when you look back, mm-hmm. that most things were positive. And, of course, the way he played in that lineup and with that team, I think, was different from the way he is looked at now and asked at some of the things he's asked to do with the Eagles now. So I think it was fine. And I think he was as honest as he could be in that situation. Yeah. And that's fine. And I guess what I really want to talk about is what he said about the lineup, because when he says the guys around me are doing, you know, X, Y, Z, a lot of times that's a line as well.
Yep.
And, you know, he even admitted, okay, this is a cliche. Oh, and this is another cliche, but he didn't talk about that one. But I really think, and not based on the results, but based on what I'm seeing in his swings, that I think he really sold on whatever the team has as the hitting plan for this season. Maybe mm-hmm. Maybe phrase it that way. And that's because even the other night in one of the games against the Fukuoka SoftBank Hawks, he got a pitch that I think if he were with Oryx last year, he hit it to right for a single. I think it was maybe a fastball or a two-seamer or something up and away. And he hit it to right for a single. I think if he was with Oryx, he would be trying to drive that ball either over the outfielder's head or out of the park. But he took a very controlled swing. And when I see that, I'm thinking, okay, well, he's not, you know, like I said, it's based on the swings, not based on the results per se. Mm-hmm. He's not trying to do more than he probably can do with that ball because he knows the guys behind him. He's got confidence that they can actually produce behind him. Whereas with Oryx, I think, you know, there was always a question. And sometimes there was, as you pointed out, a lot of times some really small or let's say diminutive players behind him who weren't going to hit the ball out. And he was going to try to do as much as he could with a pitch because he knew that, you know, there were two outs and either they're going to walk him or the guy behind him probably wasn't going to hit a home run, and it's hard for him to score from first base anyway. Hmm. So he just had a different approach with some of the pitches. And I could see that. And so when he says, you know, with the guys around me doing so well, it really helps me or it really impacts the way I'm playing the game. I really believe when he says that because, you know, a lot of times you hear that and sometimes it's a line or the hitting is contagious as a line and all that stuff. But I really see him doing that, working to keep the line moving, so to speak, mm-hmm. in that lineup, because that, you know, they are hitting and he's part of it. And you talked about the fact that he looked really good. I noticed it early on. I saw him running the bases and he looked, you know, there's probably still a dent down the right field foul line at Chiba. Mm-hmm. It's Zozo Marine Stadium now, but when he crashed into the wall and, in foul territory, I don't know, his first year here, and injured his leg and was, I don't know how bad the injury was, but let's just say he wasn't healthy the rest of the year. He wasn't fully healthy the rest of the year. Hmm. He was running the bases earlier this year and I saw him. I didn't even know who he was. I'm like, is that Romero?
Yeah. Well, they had, you know, yeah, he made a play in the outfield that I thought was, it's not the kind of guy play you see a lot from the imported outfielders,
mm-hmm.
who by context, they're expected, you know, to hit the ball hard and not to be laying themselves out and diving for balls. And he wasn't diving for balls, but he leapt for a ball at the warning track and caught after a really good run. And I thought, holy smokes, this is the guy from Oryx who had was constantly, you know, he had the knee injury in his first year, and then he had a string of shoulder and back, lower back things,
mm-hmm.
that just worked. Like, you know, last year he said, well, basically my doctor, I came into the season with my doctor telling me I needed three months rest to heal. Now we know that ain't going to happen.
Right.
Basically, he had it the whole season and he picked up another injury. And that's the Stefan Romero, that when he was healthy, he was really dynamite. So yeah, that struck me straight away that he was in a different place physically.
Yeah. And the other thing was, now this was part of the maybe difficult to hear portion on the conversation, but he talked about Mickey saying he wants to emphasize winning one game at a time and come out every day. But then Stefan turned around and said that Mickey wants to look at Tuesdays and get these, because you have these 6-game series, get them off on the right foot. And I'm like, well, that's kind of contradictory. If you're going to say that Tuesday is really important, then you know, you can't come out with a one game at a time, every day is important kind of a thing. But I'm like, but if you're drinking that punch, you drink up. Because, but I think
punch and not Kool-Aid.
Yeah, punch. It's punch. Okay. But yeah, Kool-Aid punch. I'm not sure that those two things can coexist. So it seemed kind of contradictory to me. But again, it was sometimes hard to hear that part. So maybe I got it wrong. But the fact that these 6-game series, yeah, sure, if you win the first game, that sets the tone for sure. But there are 5 other games you got to play. So I'm not really thinking that first game, unless, you know, your ace comes out and gets pummeled and you have to use your bullpen up. And I think that's the key to these 6-game series, is you need a guy who basically can get one game in there who can give your bullpen a break so that you don't have to send your bullpen out there every night to face the same guys. Because again, we've heard the hitters and pitchers talk about, the more they see a pitcher, the more comfortable they are.
Hmm.
And we already see these series in the Central League, where I think we just saw Daichi Osada pitch at Nagoya Dome against the Dragons. And then this week here he is, you know, Daichi Osada pitching against the Dragons at Nagoya Dome, same venue this time. So that's what I like about the 6-game series, is we get to see everything, and then they don't see the teams won't see each other for a while, and that's cool. But
well, yeah, I think you might want to rephrase that, since the Central League isn't playing 6-game series.
No, I you know, certainly I know. I'm just thinking that schedule wise, they were playing.
Yes, I know. You know,
Daichi Osada was starting. It was Friday a week ago at Nagoya Dome, and here he is, they're back again already.
I'll bet during when the season gets to its climax, there might be some 10-game series.
Yeah. All right, so yeah, what was it that for you that stuck around?
Well, first of all, I think Stefan's ready to write the dad's guide to Japanese baseball training. He gave us that whole rundown on what it's like to have a newborn and come into spring training, and which I really enjoyed that part, because not being a dad, not going to spring training, it was a little window into somebody else's world. And he's good about that, about sharing his off-season preparations and so on in the past. Now, a couple of things. I think I hit the same little speed bump when he talked about every game being the same, but we want to get off to a good start on Tuesday. I was thinking of rolling that around in my, I don't have a lot of room to roll it around in my mind, but I was giving it some thought, and it occurred to me that, or what struck me about the Eagles is, or that plan is, that, you know, even when you say play it one game at a time, you also know, and he made it sound like every game was, you know, the Russo-Japanese war. You know, we're not going to give it everything here. We're not going to worry about tomorrow, but we know that's not true.
Right.
But there is something to be said for having a plan, you know, and saying these are the resources we need to save for, you know, for tomorrow. These are the resources we need to, you know, and then there may be that. So there's a few guys you don't want to expose too much today. And there's a couple of guys, maybe one guy you don't want to expose too much. Even you might see a little bit today, but we're going to hold him back because we might need him in reserve for in a couple of days later. So, you know, putting, you know, today's resources in a box and then, you know, these are the guys we're going to go use 100%.
Mm-hmm.
And I can see that working. Now, Miki strikes me. I don't know a lot about him, other than he played for the Swallows, but never did anything with them and got traded. But he has a good reputation as a coach. I mean, he was a coach for the Fighters, and then he was a coach for the Swallows, and he managed there.
Mm-hmm.
Managed with them, and then he went to Rockton for 1 year to be their minor league manager, and now he's their manager. So he strikes me as being an organized sort of fellow. And other than that, I guess the last things I want to say about it is his emphasis. I thought, okay, well, what manager doesn't say, let's cut down the outs on the bases? What manager doesn't say, let's have smart at bats? Everybody says it.
Right.
You know, it's like the manager saying, you know, let's play smart and win baseball games is not unusual. I mean, unless you're Dave Okubo or something.
Hashtag
but
hi, boom.
Yeah. Well, he had a great, before we talk about the Eagles in depth, he had a great line the other night on Pro Yaku News a week ago during their series with the Marines. And the other analysts were saying, you know, the Eagles are really fast and run on the bases well. And Dave's going, well, they didn't have that kind of speed when I was managing. I said, well, no, they didn't. But they also didn't have a manager who wanted everybody to run with their heads down.
Run till somebody throws you out, right, buddy.
Exactly. Run till you're not on the bases anymore. And so, no, but I've seen, you know, alert base running. So it's not just saying it. It's in getting everybody on board and, you know, and joining in. And mm-hmm. This is what I see with the Eagles. And you mentioned, you alluded to it, you know, as a kind of the idea that the team has a hitting plan. We saw that against the Marines. We saw, I'm sure they had they anticipated that Manabu Mima was going to throw them, you know, first pitch strikes.
Mm-hmm.
And they didn't wait for pitch number two.
Yeah, yeah. If we could get first pitch strikes, we're swinging.
Exactly. And it was up and down the lineup. You do see this a lot in Japan where, you know, where teams, I remember I asked Alex Ramirez once about a Swallows pitcher through whose fastball was about, you know, about 80, 85 miles an hour making his debut against him. And I said, well, how come you guys were behind in every count? And he said, basically the coaches told us not to take the first two pitches. So it's like they were in a game and they had like two hits off this guy who was throwing junk up there.
Mm-hmm.
Because they'd been ordered basically not to swing.
Yeah.
And so this does happen. You know, teams do take organized approaches, and it's kind of interesting to see the results sometimes. So, but I certainly have seen that. But again, I think what you said about the Eagles not trying to do, or about him not trying to do too much, I think extends to the entire lineup.
Well, if you want to transition to talk about the Eagles.
Sure. Let's talk about the Eagles. And I think... I'm just going to run some numbers real quick before we move on to the next thing. I saw that Delta Graphs, they post all kinds of weird rankings. And last night they posted four of them about team slugging percentage and the percentage of runners that reach base who are left on base by pitching staffs. And
my pitching, okay.
Yep. And they mentioned the team defensive efficiency ratings, the DERs. And I think there were four, but I've got three that I remembered. Okay, so Rock 10 was second in team slugging average in Japan. The DeNA Bay Stars were number one. They were first in defensive efficiency rating, DER, which is the percentage of balls in play that are turned into outs.
Okay.
So they're turning in like 75% of the balls in play, which is pretty good. And then, despite the fact of not having a lot of balls in play, and you know not having a lot of runners on base through putting the ball in play, their pitchers were second in Japan in stranding base runners who did reach. So 80.5% of the runners who did reach against the Eagles through any means didn't score.
Wow.
So, you know, those are all really good things. And of course, you throw that in with the Hideto Asamura looking like the Terminator.
Yeah. The way he's bashing, and I think I saw a stat, and I think this was as of Saturday, because he did not homer on Friday. Six
he didn't
of his
even get a hit on Friday. I think some marked that on your calendar. He didn't do nothing. Yeah.
Six of his first eight home runs, I think he has nine, were game-winning hits. So that is something. But, you know, the thing I've noticed about the Eagles is that they're like the Cebu Lions version 3.1.
Yeah.
And the reason I say that is because, you know, the Lions have been bashing pitchers for, I don't know, the past 3-4 years, let's say. Mm-hmm. And they build a lineup that can compete with Cebu in that it can generate a lot of runs. We've seen them score, I think, double digits in runs at least 3 or 4 times this season so far. And I heard on, I think that was Pro Yucky News as well, that they've already had 10 games with double digits in hits. So they're doing that. But they don't have the home run power, I don't think, that the Lions have, but that keep the line moving kind of a aspect, I think, is a thing. And here's the thing. Okay, so Daichi Suzuki, for instance, he came over as a free agent in the offseason, and I probably didn't give that move as much credit as I should have because I didn't know that I didn't think he would play that much defensively. I think I mentioned that in the Pacific League prediction special that we did. But he's played pretty good third base for them, first of all. But the thing about him is he was a marked man with the Lotte Marines. He was the guy who, remember what I've talked about from the pitcher's point of view, what are the bases? As the bases are where you put hitters because you don't want to pitch to them. You want to pitch to the other guys. And so he was that guy, you know, pitchers were going to make him hit their pitch most of the time if they could pitch around him. But now he's in a lineup where he's not really the marked man. And so he's getting the opportunity to hit strikes, and he's hitting over 500 with runners in scoring position, and he's not necessarily killing it with the power numbers. Whereas I think when he was with the Marines, I think, remember 1 year we didn't have a home run for almost a whole weekend or something, or a whole weekend. It was Daichi Suzuki ended up hitting the first home run of the season.
I think he hit the first two, actually.
Yeah, 2000, I want to say 17 maybe.
About, yeah.
Be somewhere around there. But anyway, we know he can exhibit power, but I think in this lineup, that's really not their whole thing. Their whole thing is to not make outs. Yep. And to hit the ball and keep the line moving. And the guys they have at the top of the lineup all of those guys, they can take you deep. So if you make a mistake, they're going to hammer it pretty good. But the whole idea is to get on base and get the next guy up. And that from that point of view, I think they're not as dangerous as the Lions, and who can take you out at any point in the lineup. And exhibit A of that would be Takumi Kuriyama, who last night hit a home run and then walked with the bases loaded because they didn't want to throw him a strike in over late. And he ends up winning the game for the Lions. But we'll get to that later. But I don't know. I think lineup is really important. And I know I've heard people say you can put the guys in any order and all that stuff.
I say that quite a lot, yeah.
Yeah, but I think this lineup is special because of the makeup of the guys and then the approach that they're taking.
Well, I think that would also be true regardless of how you stack the lineup, because they're essentially they're getting quality at bats up and down the lineup. So I don't think it matters. I think everybody is basically.
But I don't think you would want to. I tend to agree because of the way the approach that these guys are taking is.
You wouldn't want to bat off somewhere for eighth. But aside from that, yeah.
But yeah, they're trying to be like a Japanese company and be interchangeable and all do the same things, which is hit a pitch and get on base and the next guy drive you in.
Well, the Japanese thing is, of course, very often not the see the ball, hit the ball kind of thing. It does tend to be more of the analytic, this is what we think is going to happen. They do tend to try to plan out their at bats more than they will on a team basis, obviously, with the incessant meetings and so on. And so we do see those kind of group group failures or group successes more in Japan. But, the other thing I think about the hitting is contagious. And I want to go back to this a little bit because it is, I hear it so often. And I if hitting were really contagious, you would think that, the pitchers somewhere would have a World Health Organization finding a vaccine for it. But of course, it's less of a contagious, and he said, there's confidence, and I also think it's less of a concern about the guys hitting behind you. I think batters, talking about the guy behind me hitting or something is largely, I think it's more of a media construct than a real construct.
I totally disagree because I've heard so many players come up and say,
I know everybody likes to say it, but I think this is.
No. I've heard the players say, look, and this is off the record stuff. Look, I knew I had to swing at this pitch because I knew the guy behind me couldn't get the job done.
Yeah.
Or the guy says, I knew they were going to pitch around me.
Yeah, I know. People say that. People say it. But people say lots of dumb stuff.
Well, that doesn't. No, I don't think. I'm talking about off the record stuff, not on the record stuff. I'm talking about off the record stuff.
Yeah. Okay. Well, I'm saying regardless. I'm saying there are players like that. I know there are players like that who do think that way, and it is true. If you've got Barry Bonds and you think, well, let's see. I think it's. Anybody who thinks we should just walk Barry Bonds and pitch to the guy behind him is probably got their head so far up some part of their body that they can't see straight. But the point is that, there's a great story. I'll go back to this. I mean, there's a great story, and this is one of my favorite Bill James ones. And, when Dale Murphy and Bob Horner back in the 80s were playing for the Atlanta Braves, and every year, Bob Horner was hurt a lot. He was kind of a fragile player. And they would always say about, there was just a thing they said, having Bob Horner hitting behind Dale Murphy makes Dale Murphy a better hitter. The problem was it was nonsense. Dale Murphy hit just as well, regardless of whether Bob Horner was hitting behind him or not. It didn't matter. It didn't matter. I can't say that enough. It did not matter. It did matter in the sense that he would get fewer intentional walks. It'd be a few games a season where he would lose RBI opportunities, but it didn't change his ability to control the strike zone. Now, okay. So my point is.
Okay. Well, your point, you're saying that it was mostly a media construct. And my thing is probably it was said by some people whom it did apply to, but the media started applying it to other guys. Who probably
the media applies it to everybody, and I think it applies to a few people.
Right, who it wasn't applicable. So that's my point. I think my point is sometimes it's a construct or something the media brings to the table as a reason why, and sometimes it doesn't apply, but a lot of times it does. And I think you have to evaluate the hitters themselves, because you talk about Dale Murphy. It's Dale Murphy, for goodness sakes. You know, you can't make him a better or worse hitter by where you put him in the lineup. But for some other people like a Daichi Suzuki, if you have him in the lineup and you have Jabari Blash and then you have Stefan Romero and they're all hot, you know, you're going to have to pitch to one of those guys and you have to throw them strikes. And that's the point.
Yeah. Well, that is true, but that's you know, that requires a guy who actually knows what a strike is.
Yeah, I understand that. I'm just saying that when you know you're the marked man, like I talked about earlier, on the team, and the guy hitting behind you isn't as, let's say, highly evaluated by the opponent, you're not going to see as many strikes in some cases. Not every case. You've got to control what you know the pitches in the zone that you can hit. But I think you tend to do more with, you know, less sometimes, and that ends up getting you out sometimes. It's not every time, it's not every player.
Yeah, I mean, there's a lot of different things. I think it's way overblown. I mean, people can't shut up about it enough, to be honest. I think it makes me ill. So anyway, to finish the story about Dale Murphy and Bob Horner, well, 1 year, Bob Horner came to play in Japan, you know, when they had collusion, he came to play in Japan for the Yakult Swallows, and Dale Murphy had his career year.
Right.
And all the announcers could say is, just think what kind of year he'd have if Bob Horner were here. You know, it was like, but this was something that was repeated. It was over and over and over again. It makes micro differences. It doesn't change players' skills. And that's the key thing. You know what I've noticed is that people being human beings would say I don't think they really attribute their success to the hitters around them, except in a kind of a general baseball as a team game kind of thing. But it's more of attributing failure to not having a hitter behind them. I think that's the common thing. And I think there's also a feedback loop. With the media repeating it, the players, you know, players are tuned in to what reporters are asking and what reporters are writing about. They know the drill. So, you know, the reporters will, you know, throw them softballs and it's okay. I don't really want to talk about it, so I'm going to lob this. I think it's all part of the process. I do think it makes micro differences, but I think anyway, so moving along, the thing about hitting being contagious, I think, is that, you know, everyone says it, but I think it's more a case of, you know, pitching's really hard. So a lot of pitching and hitting is knowing that if you just do your job, if you execute the way you've practiced and you're fit, you're going to be successful a good degree. You know, you're going to be as successful as you should be. But the problem is when people keep hitting your pitches, I like to say that very often, you know, a pitch that shouldn't be hit is followed by a pitch that shouldn't be thrown. And, you know, you see that so often when guys up and down the lineup, you know, when a guy hits a tough pitch, when a guy just has a really good swing, or the guy misses the ball and he hits a flare that drives in two runs that should have been caught or, you know, it shouldn't have been hit, you know, it's just a fluke. Sometimes the pitchers, you know, they can't be good enough. You know, they try to be too fine and they're trying to do more than they can. And this gets back to what you said, which is, I think, completely accurate about the Rock 10 Eagles, where they are now. They're not trying to do more than they're capable of.
Yeah. And, you know, we used up a lot of the time here talking about other stuff, but I did.
Sure. Sorry.
No problem. I did want to talk about Hiroaki Shimauchi, because he's a guy I think I've always liked. And in the 2013 Japan series run that they made, I always talked about, I just love his swing. It's just so compact and perfect. And he got one of the best left-handed swings, and I want to say that I ever seen, because it just looks so comfortable. He never looks off balance or anything like that. And I also wanted to compliment the fact that the team had found a closer in Kohei Morihara, who, you know, I think he had his best results last year in 64 appearances, but he has really looked like a natural for the ninth inning. And I mean, from attitude-wise to stuff-wise, he looks really good. And I don't think they miss at all Yuki Matsui not being the closer. In fact, he's going to...
They don't miss him not being a starter either.
Yeah, I was going to say they don't really miss him at all, it seems, because they're doing okay. They're leading the Pacific League with the 3.00 ERA as we sit here on Saturday, I believe. So they're doing well. We got to move along. You have any other points?
Well, I would add to the list. You know, I mentioned him already. Is Hikaru Ota, their new catcher, who seems to be fitting in nicely. You know, he looks like a best nine kind of guy at this stage of the season. But you know, this stage of the season is what, 20 games. Okay, let's give that a rest.
Right. So the only thing, other thing is, I did say Lions 3.1 or version 3.1 for these Eagles, and the biggest difference for me, not other than the power, is on the pitching side, where they're getting a lot of quality starts. We had the return of Takahiro Shiomi, the rookie version, the one I was touting as rookie of the year that year. He pitched really well in Fukuoka the other night, so they're looking good. So I have a fan at the office who's from Sendai and is a big Eagles fan, and I keep telling him, congratulations on your pennant. Every time I see him, he says, stop it, you know, the season just started. I said, I must be telling him like three times a day, congratulations on the pennant. All right, let's move along. Let's make a four-seam transition. So Friday, the fans were back at the games. Teams were allowed to have as many as 5,000 at each venue. So they've been asked, I believe, not to cheer too loudly and to hold their reactions basically to golf applause. But they were treated on Friday to three walk-off home runs, one in Nagoya, one in Osaka, and one in Fukuoka.
Yeah, how do you see that if you're a home team fan and not scream? I guess people don't scream. Maybe that's just me. But I'm like going, you know, blowing out my lungs.
Well, as you and Michael Westbay know, about, you know, between 8:45 and about 9:15 and 9:30, I'm trying to get the Twins down to sleep, and I don't have volume up very high, and I do have the games on, but I, you know, if you can imagine two adults chasing around two 3.5 year olds, it's not, maybe I would say it's not the time that I'm highly focused on baseball. So I did notice that was what was going on. And two things. Michael Westbay ruined the Oryx walk-off for me because he started to email me. And he never emails me about other teams. He has only emailed me about the Bay Stars. And last night he decided he was going to tell me that, oh, wow, a walk-off, you know, come from behind home run. And I'm like, oh, great. Because I had backed up my player. And I was watching. I was still in the eighth inning of the Fighters and the Buffaloes game, and so he ruined that one for me. So I told him, always start with a, hey, are you watching, email or message to me. But anyway, so I really didn't know. I don't know what the fans were doing in any of those games because I didn't see them live per se. I had the Dragons game on, but I know that Viciado hit the home run, but as I said, I was chasing kids around the room trying to get them to settle down to go to sleep. So I missed all the fan stuff, but I'll go back and check it out. I don't know what the impression. I don't know how you sit there and say, "Oh, very nice," and do a golf clap and then walk home after all that excitement, especially in Osaka where Adderlin Rodriguez, and I told you how much I love his swing, and man, he hit this low line drive like a 2-iron shot. Just
yeah, pretty much. He put that well. Yeah, it was a low pitch, and he, you know, it's the third straight changeup he saw, and they're more or less the same. You know, he timed that puppy right, and yeah, and it wasn't too. It was about as flat as you can see a home run.
Well,
hit.
As I heard once before in the 80s, there was a stewardess serving drinks on that thing. It was it was going someplace. It was going places, man.
Yeah, well, actually, it's funny because the ball strikes the signboarding just below a bunch of suites there in left field, and And I think there were a bunch of people who were having drinks, and they heard the sound coming off that, and they thought it was an earthquake
or
something.
They were scattering, you're right. Like, let's get the heck out of here. Anyway.
I know. That's right. Somebody's launching bombs around here, for real.
We had a question from the MPP card guy, our buddy Dave, and he asked how many... what's the record for walk-off home runs in one night? Because we had three. And so I woke up this morning and A, saw the question, and B, looked on Yahoo, and I saw a story that said this is the third time in NPB history that there were three walk-off home runs on the same night. And all the games were one-run games. We had one game rained out. It was the Giants and Bay Stars and, no, Giants Swallows. And Swallows who were rained out. And but all five games were also one-run games. So pretty exciting night for the fans to come back. Welcome back, fans.
Yeah, I guess my take on the whole thing, and I wrote this in a story, was that the sound of the fans, you know, because Asian baseball is Asian baseball. It's it has that constant... rhythm of the fans chanting and singing and musical instruments for their teams at bat, whether it's the visitors or the
correct,
you know, or the home
yeah.
team. Without that, and without being able to take part in organized cheering, and being requested not to shout, it was basically left to applause and a few small cheers, and it sounded, although without the the loud shouts that one hears at an MLB park, without many of those, it sounded very much like an American style game. The fans were, and somebody on the Pro Yaki News mentioned this, the fans were really into the game because they weren't able, you know, they didn't have that constant distraction of the cheering section, you know.
Yeah, they didn't have to go and look up all the lyrics for each player's cheer song.
Not that, but kidding. It's just that the Owendon, the cheering groups and organizations pretty much take over the volume of when their team is batting, and there, it doesn't really leave a lot of space for other people,
right.
for individuals. It's, you know, it's hijacked by the organizations. God, how Japanese
yeah.
is that? So anyway, it was really individualistic, and you heard, and what you heard was, I think when they showed a couple of these tremendous defensive plays we had a bunch the last couple of days, you could hear just the people clapping and applauding, and what tends to happen in most Japanese pro baseball games is that the home team fans, the organized fans, are really not paying attention when their team's playing defense because they're going and having a smoke and a drink because they're exhausted from the
right.
cheering. And they don't really get into the big defensive plays. And I say that's generally true because it's if you've been to a Hanshin Tigers games, you know that the non-cheering section Hanshin Tigers fans, a huge number of them are into the defense. And I would say that also about the Lotte Marines fans. They're really tuned into, you know, you hear them cheering on their pitchers to get a strikeout. You hear them going nuts over defensive plays that you really don't see in other teams.
All right.
So that was something that, and the announcers caught that, and I thought that was of interest.
All right, and it really has been fun to watch this Rock 10 series in Fukuoka against the Hawks. I feel like we're watching the teams that might be in the playoffs. I don't know. It's so early, and I really am teasing my friend at work by saying congratulations on the pennant and everything, but it does feel like we're watching something special. These games have been real tight. They've been real close.
Well, they've been – No, I wouldn't say that.
I wouldn't say
tight.
Real tight, but
yeah.
I mean, for the most part,
the
Eagles broke away once.
Yeah, well, they broke away twice.
Twice.
The Hawks have won the close ones, so I would say it's not quite even, but yeah, the results are even.
The results are even, yeah. But yeah, what I found really interesting is that Hideaki Wakui is 3-0, and he got a bunch of runs in that second game and barely could hang on to the five-inning situation. I thought it was interesting that Hajime Miki, the first-year skipper, decided he was going to stick with Wakui, even though he was, you know, he had an eight-to-something lead, and Wakui was messing it up. and stuck with him and let him get through the five innings to register that win to go 3-0. And we saw Kodai Senga come back for the Hawks, and you know, he lasted five innings, and they got him enough offense, just enough to get the lead, and they won that game for him. So I thought that those were really nice, and it's been a fun series to watch for sure.
Yeah, it's been different, but yeah, Wakui was, yeah, he was pretty mediocre, and he was pretty much Wakui, but you know, with the run support, it makes a whole difference. He can sit in there, you know, it was efficient. I mean, he could, you know, he could throw like 140 pitches and not have to go nine innings. He could do it. He could do it in five.
Hashtag high heat.
I can name that tune in such a time. All right. So yeah, that has been fun. And the Lions Marine series with the rain falling and all that other stuff, been interesting, but it's been a fun series out there. I'm enjoying the whole six-game series thing. I think it's really fun. Unfortunately, like I said, I'm going on this trip, and we won't be able to talk about the results until probably next week. But I'm really enjoying this six-game series. So let's.
I wanted to comment about the Buffaloes, because there was a couple of the Buffaloes had. They're putting together two good weeks in a row. You know, they're still in last place, but. First of all, as we mentioned, Adelin Rodriguez, and I can't say enough about the game he had Friday. It was like mm-hmm. he was, you know, I was after watching him make that catch in the first inning, I was expecting him to be sprinting across the diamond to make plays at third base. The guy was everywhere, you know. He was catching the ball. He was leading off innings. He was closing out games. He was just having the game. So and of course. More, just sort of scariness. And I'm not a person who buys into that very often, but boy, Takahiro Okada is, again, he looks like the guy we expected to see a lot of 10 years ago.
Yeah, our guest next week, to as a spoiler alert, is going to be Adam Jones of the Buffaloes. And I talked to him, and, you know, he has good things to say about his teammates, so...
Shock. That's a shock. Good things to say about your teammates. Okay. We kind of on a groove there, you know. I think everyone understands that, you know, they come on the
show. Yeah, nothing
new. Exactly. I'm surrounded by great players, as people used to say on the 2004 Rock-10 Eagles.
All right. Well, let's smack around the Central League for a second here. Yep. The rain has really destroyed the Hanshin Tigers, I think, in some respects. They've gotten rained out a bunch already, and I did see a story that said that they're gonna have to play a bunch of games on consecutive days, and that they're gonna run out of days. They're gonna have more games to be played than days to play them if the rain keeps up and other things keep conspiring against them. So that was one thing, but I did want to mention Shota Dobayashi of Hiroshima leading the Central League at the moment, I think, in average still. And I think it was maybe you or someone else, but someone was saying that he had never really been a great offensive player. And I thought, well, you know, he could hit. They just couldn't put him in the field. I don't think he ever tore up the league like this, but he wasn't a bad hitter. His problem was always, remember, I nicknamed him Prince Error Boy Dobayashi, and that was his problem. And he's been playing a lot of first base and some outfield. And he's been good there. I do think they gave him a couple shots to go back at third base and get a feel for it again. But I don't think they want him there. I don't think they need him there.
I think it's one of these things that, you know, he's kind of been the Yuki Saito of the Nippon Ham of the Hiroshima Carp. You know, he's been
maybe without the fanfare coming in, but yeah.
Well, yeah, the Carp provided that, you know, he's going to be our star, and he was going to be there. He was their poster boy, and, you know, he's going to be this and that, because he's an athletic guy. And I know when he came up, you drew comparisons to his, you know, as his physically, he's very similar to Hayato Sakamoto, maybe not quite as big, but he's that kind of player. He's that kind of athletic guy. But yeah, as you said, he was never a good fielder. He has looked comfortable at third base,
but he hasn't played much third base at all. He's played more first base and outfield.
Well, that's when they were trying to get him back into the lineup. They put him in the outfield a lot. But as far as him being a hitter, no, and no, and no. And he can, he swings hard, but I think his approach has been bad. I'll say that. I don't think he's had a good approach. I think he's been kind of a hit and miss guy, basically up there, without much of a plan or without a good plan. But he has, having said that, he spent a lot of time in the minors the last 3 years, and he's put in some reasonably good seasons in the minors. And he reminds me at this stage of his career of a Taishi Ota. A guy basically who was supposed to be able to do it all, except that the Carp really tried, like the fighters have done with Yuki Saito. They really tried to give him a lot of chances and, you know, to fail. And he did. And he always chased a lot. And the only thing I've noticed this year is that, so his walks are up a bit, his strikeouts are down a little bit. He's chasing a little less. He's not really hitting the ball any harder. I mean, he still can hit the ball pretty hard, but he's just, A, he seems more confident, and B, he's had, I think, just better luck. I think he's just had better luck with balls in play, and I think that confidence is building. I think with Ota, that was an issue with the Giants as well. You know, he was in a position where the team didn't really trust him, and okay. now he went to a team that did trust him. And I think in that sense, Dobayashi is, you know, needed that support. He didn't have it, you know, didn't have enough on his own. And to hear the announcers on the Hiroshima broadcast talk about Dobayashi, it's like just imagine what it would be like if Yuki Saito came out and was good game after game after game.
Okay, so they're drowning him with
praise. Yeah, it's a drool city. Yeah, it's
he's still as you know, before games on Saturday here, he's at 388 Kazuma Okamoto of the Giants is at 387 but leading the Central League in hitting. So yeah, some of it might be like I've seen a lot of his hits. They're not, I mean, it's no, not like
been, yeah, but I think
not it, like it's just luck. He's making better contact, and I think he's getting the results. Some of it might.
It's been a case of I think when he hits, you know, he hasn't been hitting a lot of balls right at people. That is right. The natural factor of that. And the other, the guy who's comparable, which is the guy who is definitely going to fall off the edge of the world offensive wise, is Kotaro Yamasaki of the Swallows. This guy's had phenomenal results. But when you look at what he's done, it's, you know, okay, yeah, he's hit some balls well, and he's made some good contacts, and he's had some good at-bats. But what you see is basically every time he puts a ball in play, nobody catches it.
Yeah, I mean, yeah.
His results are tearing it up. But everybody can say, oh, you know, what a good hitter he's become. But yeah, that's just the results. He's playing fine, but he's still Kotaro Yamasaki.
And they had a fun series, I would say, with the Dragons with three really tight games and one tie. And they won two out of the three games. And he had a big hit in the final game. And they came back and they scored four runs late to win the finale of that series. And in that series, the Dragons ran out of position players one night and had to send up a relief pitcher to bat, and bases loaded.
And his final swing, he had a Carter Capps kind of at bat. Did you see the video on that? He took kind of a shot putter's run at the ball. When he swung, his front foot was about 2 feet in front of the batter's box.
I did see him. Yeah. Okay. That's what you meant by that. Yeah. It was ugly. It was definitely ugly. And then the pitcher figured out, you know what? I don't have to go throw this guy strikes. He'll swing it just about anything. I think he threw him a slider in the dirt and ended the game. Anyway, really fun series. Let's make a seamless transition into talking about Jay Jackson of the Chiba Lotte Marines. And he's a fourth year pitcher. Pitched 3 years for Hiroshima, went back to the States, and then returned this year and was on our show, I believe it was in April, and he was arrested for marijuana possession on Friday morning early. The report that I read said the police were tipped off that he was using some form of marijuana, and authorities executed a search during which a number of containers of a liquid form of the substance was found at his residence. And he was arrested in Hiroshima, where he spent his first three seasons in MPV, and where he has a son, and the mother of that son both reside there. him being in custody is kind of a shock. The previous day, the team announced that both parties had parted ways, and I thought that was really strange, and I wanted to contact Jay and say, hey, what's up with that? But I figured it had something to do with this custody battle that he had been in with. That when we spoke earlier this year, he told me about, I think after the interview happened, that we just chatted for a while, and he told me about this custody battle that he was in, that he was splitting up with this significant other with whom he had a child, and that things weren't going very well. And I understood that and didn't talk about it on the show or anything. But once this broke, I think, you know, we had a thread among some of the writers, and on Twitter, we had a thread where we were just talking amongst ourselves on DM. And yeah, it's just sad. It's a sad situation, and it's a tough situation. And like someone said, the police had to have been tipped off, and whatever liquid form of the drug that he was using, somebody's got to know about that. That's no accident. So, but the problem is jail in Japan is no joke at all. It's a very hard time. I'm not sure that he'll end up going there. I read your story. You had another post. I guess you put it out late last night or early this morning.
Right. I talked with some people who are one who's familiar with the case and one who's familiar with Japan's legal system.
Right. And talked about the fact that he might probably not have to spend time, but he will probably have to leave. And this is part of a system of foreigners not having rights to or visitation rights with their children once a marriage breaks up. And
yeah,
or that's a whole other ball of
indeed. Yeah. Basically, if yeah, one parent is not a Japanese national, then they essentially have no rights over children who are born to one Japanese parent.
Yeah. So very tough situation. You know, I fired off a note to Jay and said, hey man, we're praying for you. I talked to other guys about it, and they knew about it. It's a difficult situation for everybody involved. I just hope, you know, he comes out of it not having to spend time in jail. and then, you know, his son will know him somehow, but hopefully they can keep in some kind of touch. And, you know, I just wish the best for the whole situation. It's really tough, difficult to discuss here on the show, actually.
Yeah. Now, what I understand is, I'd go into the details, but what they found, what I've heard is they found these cartridges for the smokeless cigarette or the electric cigarettes.
Okay.
That contain a liquid, and these ones happened. The liquid in these cartridges were not, you know, tobacco, but the oil from marijuana, TCH.
Hemp, yes, yeah.
Yep. So, and it's severe. Having said that, I think it's less of a big, you know, Japan's laws are behind the times, but sometimes the enforcement is a little more on the norm. I mean, where I live, the police really they're not exposed to the smell of marijuana. And I've seen policemen walk through clouds of marijuana smoke as if thinking, wow, these people are using lots of incense around here.
Yeah, right. All right. Well, we do wish the best for Jay. And thank you for anyone who hasn't seen the Jay Ball Allen blog post that Jim wrote. Please do so. It's very informative and apparently very accurate. All right, let's go to fielding questions. First one comes from British Carp Fan via Twitter, and he asked us this, I will say, a little while back.
Okay.
No shots at Jim, but British Carp Fan says, as I know little about databases for baseball, I was wondering if statistically there was any evidence of Carp offense being lower when KJ, that's Chris Johnson, pitches. It just seems that the offense has more days off or off days when he's starting, especially in the past 3 years. How easy is it to look into that sort of thing? Thanks.
Well, the answer is it's not that hard if you put your mind to it. Okay, is that the end of the question?
No, we're going to put your mind to it, and then it's easy. It's even easier.
Well, okay.
It just takes time.
It does indeed. There's jet lag and time lag, and then there's gym lag, which is a whole different thing. And So, okay. Anyway, Chris Johnson runs support. I'll just say I looked at different things. I couldn't count starts, but I did look at pitchers who've thrown 350 plus innings over the previous three seasons, and you know how well they, how many runs were scored in games they started. This is not exactly identical to run support, because if somebody scores in the 10th inning off the opponent's bullpen and you're out of the game, it doesn't help your win-loss record, but it right. still goes in the bin. Okay, Chris, there were 28 pitchers in the study, and Chris Johnson ranked, in terms of most run support, Chris Johnson ranked 23rd out of 28th. He was the 23rd best supported pitcher in the study. And what happens when you get a lot of run support? I also looked at the standard deviation, you know, how much it varied, you know, whether he was a boom or bust kind of guy. And, you know, because if they score 20 runs, it's not going to help you the next two games. And, sure. And, you know, teams that score a lot of runs or run patterns tend to have a higher standard deviation just because they can still score zero, you know, they have a wider range. So his was a little high in that respect also. In the study, the 28 pitchers, Chris Johnson has the 22nd best run support in
Japan. So what's the number?
4.55 runs per game, per start.
So that's very different from the image or the whatever British car fan is thinking about.
Having said that, the top two players on the list, now note that from 2017 to 2019, the Carp were a really, really good team. The top two pitchers on the list, 5.36 runs per game, is my namesake, Alan Curry, mm-hmm. of the Carp. And second at 4.81 runs per start was Daichi Osera. So, yeah, relative to Japan, Chris Johnson got really good run support, but relative to his teammates, not quite so much. So I think that answers your question. And in case you're curious, the most poorly supported starting pitcher in NPB from 2017 to 2019 was Yuki Nishi, current Hanshin Tiger.
Wow. All right. Thank you for that. One thing to keep in mind is, especially this season, being a top half of the rotation guy means you're locked in against other, you know, number twos or number threes.
Well, they were until all the rainouts.
Until the rain started, yes. But yeah. I won't say locked in, you know, now, but you tend to get locked in with some of those guys until they jumble the rotation around. And that contributes heavily to the conceived lack of run support, because they're usually facing top pitchers on the other side as well, and that makes it hard in terms of getting that run support. So it's not always what you see is what you get. It's in that respect, if you're facing a top pitcher, you shouldn't really expect to get a lot of runs. And you know, when I saw the matchup last night, actually, Daichi Osada pitching against the Dragons
at
Nagoya Dome against Yudai Ono, I thought, oh well, the Dragons maybe they can win the second two of this series, because they're not going to win the first one. But it turned out to be a good game, a good pitching matchup, and they won in the extra innings. So, but again, they didn't score a lot of runs. They didn't score a lot of runs to win that one. All right, the next question is from Dakota, and it's Dakouduh. So I want to actually pronounce it Dakota.
Thank you, Homer.
And he says, could you guys talk about merchandise? What's the best place for Americans to get it? And he's in Alabama. So the best place, I don't know the best place, but I know the best place where you can find out where to get fan merchandise. And that is with Deanna Rubin. And she is at MARINERDS, at Marinerds on Twitter. And she can direct you. And I will also tweet out a place that Michael Westbay found that has some very limited amount of paraphernalia for, I think it's mostly Tiger stuff, but at least it has there, and you can go from there. Otherwise, I'm not really sure. Living outside of Japan, I don't know how you go about getting merchandise. But I suspect once the major leagues try to start and end up maybe stopping, that you'll be coming over to see some games. And not to tease, I'm hoping that the major leagues don't start and stop because the Dodgers have a really good chance of winning. But who knows? Like I said, uncertain times, to me, that's like kind of a fallacy to make that statement there. Times are always uncertain. But we thank you for listening, and we invite you to chime in. Do so via email at yakyujohn@gmail.com. Hit us up on Twitter at JBWPodcast or on the Facebook page. Send us an MP3 so we can hear your voices. Those are always nice. Questions and comments, especially, you know, some criticism, that's fine. We invite you to do all of the above. Make sure you check out jballallen.com, and Jim has been very prolific and very informative, and stay in the know on MPB. We will talk to you next week. Enjoy your baseball.
See you at the ballpark.
Follow the hosts on Twitter at JBWPodcast and at jballallen. Be sure to send in your questions with #HighHeat, and you'll hear from us again next week.